Third case for argument this morning is Townsend against Fuchs. Mr. Harf.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appear today on behalf of a federal litigant who happens to be a prison inmate who is seeking to remedy an egregious misapplication of Rule 56 of the federal rules governing summary judgment. I say misapplication because in this case, the trial court took it upon herself to decide on summary judgment the highly disputed and fact-specific question of whether the conditions of confinement during Reggie Townsend's 63-day stay in the temporary lockup unit at the New Lisbon Correctional Institution were atypical and significant. I am, of course, referring to the Supreme Court established 12 years ago in Sandin versus Connor, that a prison inmate may not be subjected to conditions of confinement that are atypical and significant in relation to the ordinary incidents of prison life without being afforded at least minimal due process. Last year, this court in Gillis held that this inquiry was a factual one, fact-specific, in the words of the Gillis opinion. And Gillis certainly disposed of the notion that the duration of the stay is dispositive. The stay at issue in Gillis was 12 days. And in Gillis, the court recognized that duration alone does not decide a case like this. The approach is similar to that taken by the Second Circuit in the Palmer case and other similar cases, which make clear that duration is not the only relevant factor. Quoting from Palmer, the conditions of confinement are a distinct and equally important consideration in determining whether a confinement rises to the level of atypical and severe hardship. Both the conditions and their duration must be considered, since especially harsh conditions endured for a brief interval and somewhat harsh conditions endured for a prolonged interval might both be atypical. And looking at the facts of this case, we have an inmate, Reggie Townsend, who 4 days after a riot in another building is removed without warning from the general population, thrown into a cramped TLU cell that was already occupied by another inmate, forced to sleep on a cement floor on a cold damp mattress during the middle of a Wisconsin winter, given only a thin polyurethane mattress laid over the shower drain and directly adjacent to the toilet. And there he stayed for 63 days.
Was there any prohibition about removing the mattress from the floor when the shower was in use or immediately thereafter?
No prohibition at all. And in fact, Mr. Townsend testified that when the guards would turn on the shower, they'd give you some warning, and it would be turned on from a central location. They would both take the mattress off the floor and try to push it off to the side so that it wouldn't get wet. Unfortunately, that wasn't always successful. The mattress had a crack in it. It got damp, and once you've got that kind of material gets wet, it's very hard to get it to dry. It started growing mold, looking at the facts most favorably to Mr. Townsend, he was forced to sleep on a wet mattress during his stay there.
Do we know whether the mattress, in fact, was unsafe? In other words, were any tests done at all on the mattress, whether or not it did? There was a mold on the mattress that was
the mattress he slept on could not be located. We have exemplars. We have mattresses that were in use then, but not the one that he used.
If I recall, he requested a new mattress at some point.
He did.
Did he specify in any way why he needed that new mattress.
Yes, he told Sergeant Allen, who's one of the defendants in this case, that his mattress had gotten wet and moldy, requested a new one, and was told, if we give you a new mattress, we have to give everyone one. And
that's in the record?
That's in the record. It's in Mr. Townsend's deposition testimony, and I believe that it made its way into the party's findings of fact. It was a tiny cell, too. The cell was 12 and a half by 6 feet, which is about maybe the size of that box to my left, 78 square feet for two grown men, 36 square foot per man. That is, as we point out in our brief, less than we afford the combatants who are held at Guantanamo. And it is significant that he was never let out of a cell. He never had any recreation. He was never let out for exercise. No visiting was permitted. Significantly, no personal property was permitted in the cell, meaning they had no books or magazines to pass the time. It was 63 long days in a cell the size of that box. Why couldn't a jury find that those conditions were atypical and significant?
Why do you believe this is a question for a jury rather than the judge?
Because like all factual questions, if there's a genuine dispute, the ultimate decision must be made by the finder of fact, and in this case there was a jury demand.
That's just to repeat your proposition that it should be by a jury, but we normally say that questions of constitutional law are decided by judges. The Supreme Court in Sandin against Connor decided the question itself. It didn't say, and now let's have a jury apply our standards.
I don't know why this would be different, say, than an Eighth Amendment case where a jury will decide whether given conditions constitute cruel and unusual punishment, given the norms of the community.
Jury will decide that either. Judge will decide whether it's cruel and unusual punishment, although it's conceivable that a jury might have to decide what the conditions are.
Well, in Gillis, this court held that the question of whether conditions were atypical and significant was a fact issue, fact-specific.
I understand that, but your position seems to be that the Supreme Court of the United States made a constitutional mistake and violated the Seventh Amendment in Sandin by analyzing the question itself rather than sending it to a jury.
Well, sometimes appellate courts do that, and I suppose it depends on the facts of the case and where on the spectrum they lie. I mean, there's a spectrum, and on one end there are conditions that no one could reasonably say are atypical and significant, and on the other hand are conditions where everyone would say they are unreasonable and atypical and significant. But for the cases in the middle where there is a genuine dispute, the Seventh Amendment does permit litigants to take that dispute to a jury for resolution.
And where do you think this case is? Is this case at one end or is it in the middle?
I think it's in the middle. I think that reasonable minds could differ, but I think that the trial court looked at this case as if she were the one that were responsible for resolving the disputed factual issues, and she went ahead and decided them. And as a result, Mr. Townsend was deprived of a jury. Not only that, in making her decision, she excluded from her consideration the testimony from one of the country's leading corrections experts, Charles Montgomery, who compared the conditions that were endured by Mr. Townsend against all plausible baselines and concluded that under any plausible baseline, the conditions that Townsend was subjected to at New Lisbon were atypical and significant.
Am I misunderstanding you, sir? You don't agree with this expert? Who?
No, we do agree with it, but in making her findings, the trial court excluded consideration of his affidavit testimony on procedural grounds.
As I understand it, your expert thought that this was an atypical situation.
Exactly. Exactly.
As a matter of law.
No, as a matter of fact, as a matter of a person who had worked in both state and federal prisons around the country, including being the warden at Pelican Bay and running the Puerto Rico prison system, he came, he visited the TLU, he inspected it, he videotaped it, and he submitted an affidavit in opposition to the motion for summary judgment that said, in my opinion, as a corrections expert, these conditions fell below any plausible baseline that you care to look at. He looked at three baselines, the conditions in general population, the conditions in the segregation unit, and the conditions in the Wilkinson case. And under all three baselines, he concluded, as a factual matter, that the conditions were atypical and significant, and the trial court refused to consider this evidence because, according to the decision, it was not included in plaintiff's proposed findings of undisputed fact. But, of course, there was no requirement that the plaintiff, who was opposing the grant of summary judgment, propose his expert's findings as undisputed facts. Mr. Montgomery's opinions were disputed. We knew that. The state certainly disputed them. But his affidavit was submitted in opposition to a summary judgment motion. And under Rule 56, that is all required. That is all that is required. An affidavit in opposition does not have to be submitted as a proposed undisputed fact. So not only did the trial court take it upon herself to render this factual decision, she did so explicitly without consideration of the testimony of the plaintiff's corrections expert. And again, because this is such a fact-specific inquiry, she, A, should have considered all the evidence, and B, she should have recognized that the parties did dispute the severity of the conditions that Mr. Townsend was subjected to, and should have let a jury decide. Just because it's a prisoner case, just because it's a constitutional case, doesn't mean that the jury no longer has a function. And we believe that the trial judge here, usurped the jury's function.
By the way, when should the hearing have been provided, in your view?
To Mr. Townsend?
Yeah.
Before we even get to the hearing, he needed to be notified of the charges against him. He was never notified of against him.
But the whole point of this atypical business is that you get a hearing before you can be given atypical conditions of confinement. So when, in your view, would that hearing have been provided?
I think a hearing would have been part of what he was due, and I think that...
When? You see, the reason I'm asking this is because normally the rule is that the hearing has to be held before the deprivation can be imposed.
Right.
And that means that all the conditions have to be assessed ex ante.
That would
mean, in particular, it seems to me, that one couldn't consider the wet mattress because ex ante the mattress was dry. And we would have to figure out what the expected duration of the confinement was. Right? You're saying it lasted 63 days is thoroughly ex post. So what would we know ex ante about the expected duration of the confinement? Because that would be vital, on your view, to figure out whether there's a hearing entitlement.
We're not contending that there should have been a hearing before he was placed in TLU. What we're contending is he should have been notified of why he was placed in TLU and then given some opportunity along the way to contest his placement there. He was never told during the entire time why he was there.
Didn't he get notice on the day he was put in the TLU?
He got a form on which someone, and it was never identified who, had written held for investigation of physical altercation.
Well, then it said in a section marked reasons for placement, Cooper checked a box, the offender may impede pending investigation.
That was a box that he checked, but it's not enough.
Well, it's beginning to sound like there was some reason given to him.
Well, but what reason could they have possibly had to think that he would impede a pending investigation? And how could he contest that charge if he was never given a hearing? And that was.
But it gets back. That was, I think, an overstatement to say he got no notice, though, right?
He got a form which has four boxes. Yes, that box was checked. He may impede an investigation, but I don't think that really qualifies as notice of the charges. That's a generic reason that someone checked without any evidence or backup for making that charge. At other points during his confinement, the state was saying that he was held because he was cleaning a cell 4 days afterwards. There's another document that says he was held for asking him to go to the bathroom. Nobody could explain it. I see my red light is on. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Hart. Ms. Tollefson.
May it please the court, my name is Amanda Tollefson, and I represent Larry Fuchs and Jerry Allen in this matter. The facts in this case are simple and undisputed and were properly decided by the district court. On November 11, 2004, there was a very serious, large-scale gang riot at New Lisbon Correctional Institution. Several waves of inmates rushed an officer station, resulting in several NLC officers being assaulted so badly they had to be taken to the hospital. When other officers came to assist in the emergency situation, they too were rushed and assaulted. By luck and perseverance, control was regained of the unit before a hostage situation resulted. However, it was quickly determined that this riot was a premeditated gang riot in which several gangs and possibly over 100 inmates had been involved in planning against staff, and that an extensive investigation would be required to determine who was involved in the serious breach of security resulting in staff assaults. Institution rules were suspended, and institution was placed on lockdown, and staff needed to move quickly to thwart any attempts by inmates to thwart the investigation into this riot, such as cleaning up blood, coercing others not to help in the investigation, etc. Moreover, tension between inmates and staff remained, were high. There was a risk that some inmates, according to Warden Ferry, were still out there as at NLCI cells cannot, in general population, cannot be locked and would act out as they knew an investigation was pending and they had nothing left to lose. A team of investigators from other institutions in the state of Wisconsin was brought in to help in the investigation. Under these circumstances, Townsend was identified as someone who might have been involved in the riot and was placed in temporary lockup, which is a non-disciplinary investigative status.
Was there any effort at the time to determine how long temporary meant?
They knew that the investigation was going to be quite detailed. They had to review tapes of the cell block that the riot occurred on and try to determine who was in the area. They also, because the riot was tied to different gangs, needed to talk to different inmates. And so I think they expected the placement to last as long as the investigation took and when they until they determined that somebody...
It doesn't really answer my question, right? The Supreme Court says significant increases, atypical hardships and so on, require hearings. And whether there's a new and atypical hardship depends in part on how long you're going to stay there. Spending 2 days in a maximum segregation cell is different from spending 2 years there. Now, presumably that means in order to carry out the Supreme Court's inquiry, there has to be some assessment ex ante into the expected length of the detention. I'm not sure however long it takes amounts to a good faith effort to determine ex ante how long someone's going to be in the more confined circumstances.
Well, all I can say is that they brought in investigators from around the strait to try to get this resolved as quickly as possible. I would also argue that duration is one consideration, but in light of the, in light of the riot circumstances, that weighs against the duration, as well as the fact that this is a non-disciplinary confinement in which ordinarily there is no due process in being placed in a non-disciplinary administrative confinement.
Counsel, if I may, your opposing counsel said that at some point the prisoner here asked for a new mattress, asked Alan for a new mattress, and gave Alan a reason, said that my mattress is wet and it's moldy, and that Mr. Alan replied, if we give you a new mattress, we'll have to give everyone one. Is that an accurate rendition of the state of the record?
I don't believe so. All the record provides in Mr. Townsend's deposition is that he asked Alan for a new mattress and kind of pointed towards the mattress. There's no indication that he told him, look, my mattress is sopping wet and moldy, and that's the reason I need a new mattress. In addition, this occurred about, according to Mr. Townsend, 1 week into his placement in TLU, and There was no further knowledge on Alan's behalf past that point. The record is devoid of any offender complaints from any inmate during this time that there were mattresses in this condition, so there was not a pervasive problem that would have been known to Sergeant Alan.
Did Alan admit that he understood the potential problem of moldy mattresses?
No, he did not, of moldy mattresses, no. And he did not admit that he thought that mattresses would be in such a state that they could get wet and be a problem. What he said is that there was a probability that if the inmate would not roll up the mattress or move the mattress out of the way as instructed, there's a possibility it could get wet. But he didn't think that it would result in serious or harmful conditions.
He affirmatively said that.
Yes, and yes. I believe in his deposition.
We got a real record problem here, folks. We really do. And I think it's crucial to whether or not there was a knowing deprivation of a or creation of a health hazard. And I'm getting two different renditions of the record here.
Well, at the very most, Alan was told once that there was a problem with his mattress, and he had no other evidence that this was a problem with any of the other inmates. Like I said, there was no other offender complaints. There was nothing written in the seg logs, that would have regarded this problem. And I think Alan testified at his deposition that if there would have been something written, if there had been a problem, or his officers would have told him that if there would have been a problem, he wasn't really, he wasn't told of any of those things. Also,
Alan saw these people every day.
Right, and he testified that he did not think that the showers that occurred once every 3 days would cause a serious problem. He said that, there was a drain in the floor, the mattresses could get wet, but I didn't think it would be a problem because I saw the inmates putting the mattresses up. Inmates were provided bedding, blankets, towels. I think both Townsend and Mr. Allen indicated that there was an extra towel given to clean up the mattresses. He didn't have actual knowledge that there was a serious harm posed to Mr. Townsend. I believe in the Roush case, which involved an inmate who told an official that he didn't want to be placed into a cell with another inmate because he feared for his life. And then when the officer was going to put these two inmates in anyways, he said, is this going to be a problem? The inmate just kind of nodded or shook his head no, and that was it. The corrections officer put the two inmates in the cell. The inmate was eventually assaulted by the other inmate, and the court held that this still was not enough to create actual knowledge because he didn't have reason to believe that it was going to be serious, as the inmate more or less, you know, did tell him that he was feared, but then later reneged. And also, the court considered that inmates sometimes say things that aren't true. In this case, we have Mr. Allen, a week after Mr. Townsend's placement in the cell, being informed maybe that this mattress, there's a problem with it, which inmates often indicate that there's problems for other reasons. He, with all of the knowledge that he had about the unit and seeing the showers, and...
What exactly did Townsend say to him?
I'm sorry?
What exactly did Townsend say to Mr. Allen?
He indicates that he told him, look, I need a new mattress. I showed him my mattress and things like that. That's all the record has. That was 1 week into his TLU placement. There was no evidence of anything being said after that point by Townsend or any other inmate.
And Townsend says he was oblivious to the problem of mold on the mattresses.
I'm sorry?
He was oblivious to the problem of mold on the mattresses.
Mr. Allen?
Mr. Allen, I'm sorry.
Yes, he said that it was not a problem in the segregation.
He was the top guy, wasn't he, in the segregation unit?
He was the segregation sergeant. He was the one who was down there, yes. The top guy, I don't know.
This doesn't raise a question of whether or not he was ostrich-like and
Well, no, because there was no indication of a problem. None of his other officers indicated a problem. He walked the tiers and did not view any sorts of problems. There were no complaints. There was nothing in the seg logs. I don't think that was an ostrich. I respectfully disagree and think that he just didn't have actual knowledge.
What do we know in this record about what other similarly situated inmates were experiencing? That is there an argument that other inmates in this same segregation block were complaining about their mattresses?
No, they were not complaining that their mattresses were wet and moldy.
My question is, what does the record show, not what you believe? Does the record show one way or the other what the inmates were doing?
The record shows a lack of any offender complaints regarding mattresses during this time period.
There is testimony in this record that there were no other inmate complaints. That's what you're saying?
I believe so.
You know, it's potentially different whether there is testimony that there were no such complaints or, on the other hand, just silence in the record. And you're saying there is evidence that there were no other complaints?
Yes.
Okay.
As to Mr. Townsend's TLU placement, even assuming all the conditions, which is what we did for summary judgment, Mr. Townsend was given notice of why he was being placed in TLU on the day that he was placed there. He was given two notices, actually, and they both indicated that it was pending this investigation into a riot. In addition to that, Mr. Townsend got reviews of his placement there, indicating that they were still investigating the riot situation. He was eventually cleared. As to Warden Ferry, the record shows that she did not have actual knowledge of the conditions that Mr. Townsend alleges in TLU. And also because the conditions of which he experienced, which I argue are not atypical and significant to what an inmate can expect, especially in light of a riot, in a riot situation. As I said, it was an administrative confinement, and other than the wet mattress, the conditions are well within what an inmate can expect in prison. There can be no due process claim against her either. If there are no further questions, I rest.
Anything further, Mr. Horth?
Just to clear up a couple factual points, Mr. Townsend submitted an affidavit in opposition to the summary judgment motion, which is included as part of the appendix starting at A49. Mr. Townsend states in that affidavit that I sent numerous complaints in the form of information interview request slips to Defendant Fuchs about the conditions of my confinement and segregation, including being forced to sleep on a wet, moldy, and smelly mattress using the internal mail system. I also complained verbally to segregation correctional officers, including Segregation Sergeant Allen. I also filed formal complaints with the inmate complaint examiner about the condition of my mattress. The most immediate way to voice a complaint in segregation is to inform a correctional officer using the intercom system inside the cell, followed by verbal complaints to segregation correctional officers. And he goes on to talk about how he did that. I do not believe it's in the appendix, but I believe it is in the record. There were at least 8 or 9 other written complaints from other inmates during that same time period. He was not the only inmate.
Complaints about what? About moldy mattresses or just I'm unhappy?
About being double-celled, about having to sleep on the floor. I can't tell you from memory whether...
Makes a difference. Now, Ms. Tollefson said there is evidence of absence instead of just absence of evidence. And what's your position on what the record shows about whether other inmates were complaining about moldy mattresses?
I cannot tell you what the substance of those complaints were. I know that there were several other complaints filed. My recollection is they had to do with double selling, lack of exercise. I'm not sure if they dealt with wet or moldy mattresses.
Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you.
And the case is taken under advisement.